Tell me when you're ready, Jason. Okay. Good morning, everyone. It is August 19th. I think. And just after 9 a.m. In the Public Service Commission hearing room, I am Randy Chrisman, filling in, I guess, at the moment for our chair, Julie Fedorchak, who is online. And Commissioner Sherry Haugenhofer is also here. With us are several staff members, but among the Public Utilities Division working on the case at the table, our Public Utilities Division attorney, Victor Shook. Director Victor Shook, Adam Renfent, and our attorney Brian Johnson. Julie, did you want me to continue on beyond that point, or I'll turn it over to you for some comments if you have anything before we really get started?
Yeah, I can, since it's in my portfolio, I can kind of direct the discussion.
And just so you know, since you can't see around the room, Jason is in here at the controls as well as Steve Call, our executive director.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that. I did have a little bit of a hard time hearing you, and Jason's pretty soft too, so I don't know if the mics are. It's a sort of a fuzzy connection for some reason. Normally it's so clear. So anyway, we'll make it work. So I can
keep re-emphasizing that if we're not coming through loud enough.
Yeah, that's quite a lot better there, Randy. So, okay. So does Sherry have any opening comments?
No.
Okay. All right. So if that's then the gist of it, we'll just get rolling right into the matters at hand, which in this case we had the hearing almost a year ago, and so it was a little bit of a refresh to kind of dig back into this case and remember where we left off. There was that long pause because the company had not received its local permit, and it's the practice of the commission to not get ahead of that local permitting process. So we did receive notification from them this spring that they received the permit or this summer. And so we're kind of picking this back up. I met with Adam and Victor about sort of where we're at, what sorts of things are outstanding, and I kind of have a list of things that I wanted to walk through, and then I'm sure my colleagues also have questions. So if it's all right with you guys, I'll just get started on my list, which involves some updates that I think staff are prepared to have. Randy, Sherry, is that an okay way to proceed?
I like it.
Yeah. I agree. Yep.
All right. Very good. So, Sherry, you're in the really unique position to having not been at the hearing, but we have such good electronic records available to you, so and to all of us. So, that's a nice way to get up to speed quickly on these cases. Well, maybe not quickly, but it's a way to get up to speed.
It's an eight-hour hearing that I heard reviewed.
Yeah, good. All right, so Adam, you and I met a couple days ago and have had a list of things that you were going to reach out to the company to get an update on. And so one of the first things was they have received their conditional use permit, but they still have some outstanding road permits. And so I'm wondering if you have received any updates from the company on any outstanding local permits.
Yeah, so I reached out to the company, and they said the road use permits are usually obtained closer to the construction timeline. But they said they are committed to obtaining those prior to construction, which is a condition we normally put in our orders.
And is there any other local permits outstanding besides the roads?
Not that I'm aware of, and not that they had claimed.
Okay. All right. The second kind of simple update.
Go ahead. Just on other local permits.
Sure.
My notes reflect that I had a lingering question out there about whether their weed management plan is filed in the application, but whether Bowman County Weed Board had accepted their weed management plan. And if that came in as a late file, I missed it.
I'll have to check to see if that came in a late file, but I believe after reviewing the testimony that they had brought someone up from the county to testify that they had indeed obtained the approval for that plan.
Okay, if you could just double-check
that, we can
verify
that.
I missed that. Thank you.
Yep. Also, on the, it might not be as germane, but as part of the county use permit, they've attached, of course, a condition that their permit is conditioned upon them obtaining the road use permits, as well as approval of a mediation process for all non-participating landowner complaints. So just an FYI.
Say that one more time, Adam, the second part.
What are you referencing? Is that the late exhibit when you reference?
Oh, yes, I'm referencing late filed exhibit number 37, which is the conditional use permit.
And what was the second condition?
The second condition is approval of a mediation process for all non-participating landowner complaints.
And who's approving that?
That would be the Bowman County Zoning. Yeah, Bowman County Planning and Zoning Commission. So that's who approved the county use or the conditional use permit.
Okay. So then we should check with the company and see what the status is of that condition on their permit, whether the Zoning Commission has approved their mediation process for the non-participating landowner complaints.
Right, and they also had a condition that this won't be a problem, but they put more onerous restrictions on the wind decommissioning, in which they're requiring wind decommissioning go from 24 months for completion upon expiration of the facility to 9 months. But I don't think that'll be an issue since that requirement is a little more onerous than our rules provide.
Yeah.
So just to clarify, Adam, on Exhibit 37, the additional conditions that are to be met, you're going to follow up with the second and the third one?
I can follow up with the second one. And the third one, our rules read that when a facility reaches its end of useful life, mm-hmm. that facility has to be decommissioned within 24 months. And this says that it has to be, the facility has to be decommissioned within 9 months. But prior to them placing the facility in operation, they have to have an approved decommissioning plan, cost estimate, as well as financial assurance.
I want to make clear that there's not a misunderstanding here, that I think if I understand you correctly, that it's okay because theirs is more onerous than ours. I don't care how much more onerous it is. It does not replace ours. They still need a plan and financial assurances approved by us as well.
Right. They just want it done a little quicker. So they don't want to
they don't want them waiting, you know, having 2 years to decommission. They want to accelerate that.
I don't know for sure about their ability to enforce it then.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And so no matter what they have, that does not replace our requirement.
Okay. Okay. I see where you're going with that.
So if they're requiring financial assurances, well, then I guess it's going to be twice as much financial assurances, but you're going to have ours.
Yeah. And they also read that it's kind of tough to read, but they want to list Bowman County as second beneficiary to the financial surety. So that's something we might have to dig into.
Well, the chairman signed off on it, on this, according when right. I look at this yes. exhibit. I think what, I just want to be clear that we're having that these plans are in place. Not just to say we approve them, but what is the plan in there in place?
The plan for decommissioning?
Right.
We haven't received it yet.
And that's what I'm asking for follow-up on number two and number three.
Okay,
We don't typically get the decommissioning plan ahead of the permit. They have it. It has to be approved.
But they're listing on the number three, listing Bowman County as second beneficiary. I mean, we just take that on that exhibit. We just take that. Sorry for my questions. We just take that. They're approving that.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I guess how I read that, you know, maybe this is, I mean, I haven't spoken with Brian about this, but I guess how I read that is that in the event that the state fails its obligation in terms of decommissioning it, as we have probably a bond in this case, since they're not credit rated at, you know, A+ and above, but if we fail our obligation, then that bond would revert to Bowman County. That's kind of how I read that.
We've never done this before. Yeah, right. I want to hear legal implications of it. Just no matter what, we are, my perspective is, we do not lessen any of our requirements because a county requires something similar. If that in any way lessens our capability of going after that, or if because they had an earlier requirement, then all of a sudden they collected on the bond money before we did, and then we're not able to track how well they do it because Bowman County has the money instead of us. I don't know enough about that. I just want to emphasize someone else doing something does not eliminate the requirement that we're doing it.
Right.
There is language in, I believe, Chapter 4922 that deals with our requirements versus local requirements, which ones take precedence, which ones do not. I can't find it at the moment. I'll continue looking for it while the discussion continues. But I believe it is spelled out somewhere in there how these things interact and whether or not I'll be able to make a determination right here and now on it, probably not, but that is something we'll have to look at.
Okay, I'm satisfied with that.
Okay, so you'll report back on both of those things. I do think just on the front end, we're going to need more than one work session on this case, so can keep a running list of everything that needs to be report it back next time. All right, so are we good with the local use permits and any other local permitting issues?
Okay.
All right, the second thing on my list was the status of the FAA review of the site for ADLS. Did the company have a report on that? Because that was outstanding during the hearing as well.
Yeah, so the turbine selection and final layout hasn't been finalized yet. So once it is finalized, then they'll go and seek that approval.
They haven't even applied yet?
No, they haven't.
Hmm. When did they intend to finalize the turbine selection and layout, Adam?
That's a good question.
So I thought they had to have that finalized before the hearing so that Game and Fish could comment on the final turbine layout.
Hi.
Well, doesn't that kind of fall in line? It's been now a while since we've finished an approval process on a wind farm, I guess. But isn't that typical that comes later, though? And that's why they have some alternates always, because, you know, our final approval might be that we approve, you know, 95% of the turbines, but there's one or two that for some reason we don't. So until we actually issue a certificate, they don't know exactly what our plan is going to be. And then they start working with their alternates to do a final site plan. That's how I'm remembering it, but correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
No, that makes sense as long as they aren't changing the locations of turbines. If they're just picking among set locations and, like, it's going to be these instead of those, but they're all in their spots. That's one thing versus we're moving them around.
Right. But for the light mitigation, I'm thinking, like, say there's an alternate that's in kind of a clump of several that are not alternates. Now you pick that up and add that. Maybe that's the one that they would want to put the beacon on, as opposed to one of the others that they would use if they didn't use the alternate. I don't know, but that's how I've always assumed it worked.
Yeah.
And how the study that is, they assume the worst selection. In other words, if one turbine layout is, or one turbine design is louder than the other, they will assume that for the noise study.
Yeah, we were talking about the lights for the FAA.
But I can't think of one for the lights, though.
The lights might need the final turbine selection because it could, I suppose.
Right, yeah, for the
change.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm just, concerned that, like, this one, you know, they'll have to have the lights up and functioning when they commission the facility. There isn't going to be like a 12-month delay allowed. So if that federal permitting takes longer than they anticipate, that could delay them. But
you may want to consider spelling that out in the order. The law around the light mitigation isn't really clear about newer ones. It was kind of specific to one cited prior to a certain date and one cited subsequent to a certain date. And the ones subsequent to a certain date have a requirement to have them functional by a date that's now in the past. So for clarity's sake, we may want to just spell that out in this order.
Yeah. Well, I guess in my mind, I think it's clear because anything cited after that date has to have them functioning as of that date, which means as of the date they start.
Yep. But that's how I see it as well.
Okay. Okay, so we can clarify that. All right. And does anybody have anything else on the ADLF?
I do not.
No.
Okay. All right, thank you. The next one, I want to dive into the other. Here's another smaller one, but Adam, did you get any information back from them on the justification for their tree clearing, their wider tree clearing?
No, I didn't. That's one follow-up that I need to do. But for the benefit of the other commissioners, they have requested to clear trees. I think right now is our rule 25 feet on either side. And they've requested a variance to increase that by another 50 feet.
Another 50 feet?
Yeah, I believe so.
250 feet.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that's how it is. I don't have the order I don't have the order in front of me, but it's 50.
So would that be 75 feet then, Adam?
Yeah, that's what I have to. I think it might be. I don't know, though. It might, actually, it's, if it's, what is it, 25 on one side of, or you know how that works?
Let's see here. I'm looking at your draft order. Is that where you're thinking you included it?
Yes. Yep, it would be an order provision, I believe.
Oh, in an ordering provision, okay.
Or in other mitigative measures.
What, did they give a reason? Just, I mean,
okay.
Others have gotten by with the, what we currently do. And
well, if you recall, we had a Denbury had a CO2 pipeline in that area, and we gave them a variance. I forget what it was, but that's a pretty tough terrain to maneuver within around Bowen County. So I think we would, if we asked them, you know, which we will follow up, we'd probably receive a similar answer.
Here's what you have written in the draft order. Bowman Wind is authorized to clear areas in the project area wider than 50 feet in order to construct collection lines, access roads, and or crane walks. So that's pretty open-ended. I think we should probably narrow it, because wider than 50 feet means that they could, there's no
end.
Maximum width.
Right. And that's, we'll have to follow up.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you'll check on the map.
And then there are also no locations, right? When we approved the Denbury one, we received a map showing the locations that they intended to clear wider than, you know, X number of feet.
Yeah. I'd like that clear up if it's the whole area or certain areas.
When was that? When did they request that?
Bowman Wind?
Yeah.
I don't recall them asking about it at the hearing. I think that came in after the fact, but I'd have to check.
All right.
You know, I just want to point out, discover the difference between Denbury and this. I can't remember the amount of miles that Denbury come across North Dakota, but it's a relatively straight corridor coming that many miles, and so you are a little further on either side of a line, and so we're probably talking about 100 acres or something like that. This project is on tens of thousands of acres, and their roads and everything go all over the place.
Right.
So, they won't be clearing on the tens of thousands of acres. I understand that. But there's a whole lot more miles of access roads and everything involved here, I'm believing, than what there was Denbury's pipeline. And so it's just magnified a lot, I would imagine. And so I don't know if that changes anything about Bowman County's position, about their soil conservation district's position, about the position of the environmental agencies.
Well, I guess I would say they need to provide a reason for this waiver. I mean, if the commission's going to grant a waiver, it should be with good cause to grant such a waiver. On really any provision. So if they haven't provided, I mean, if they've just requested in the proposed findings, I mean, either we eliminate it and use our standard 50-foot width, or they need to provide something to support why we should grant such a waiver.
You know, if there were some specific ravines or something like that, that would be different than just footprint wide, I think.
Okay, so they'll you'll seek additional information on the locations and the maximum width that they're looking for and the rationale for it. Anything else on tree clearing? Okay. Oh.
No, not that I'm aware.
Got it. Okay. Then I, the other two big issues on my list are regarding the game and fish things, which I'd kind of like to say for last for me. And then some clarification on their interconnection status and their buyer, if those are, if we have some clarity on that. I feel like I thought that they had both an interconnecting agreement and a buyer, but then something I read or heard made me doubt that. So let's take that one up first, and other Randy and Sherry, you might have questions about that bucket of things to the interconnection to the grid and the buyer. So Adam, first, can you clarify what you know about those two things, the interconnection and buyer?
My belief is the last time I followed up with they had the interconnection. I believe the buyer is Basin.
So you believe they have both?
Yeah, I can double check up on what the offtake is.
I'm disagreeing. I do not believe the interconnection is at a Basin substation.
It's, yeah. Right.
I do not believe Basin is a buyer. I believe the application said, and they discussed in testimony, that they were looking for an off-taker and also may operate as a merchant generator.
Okay.
And I've reviewed, this is Victor, I've reviewed the SPP interconnection queue, and they are pretty well along in that queue, but they, at this point, have not executed an interconnection agreement with SPP.
Okay.
And I'm going to say on this topic, I have some really, really big concerns and have been studying it for a number of days here since all of a sudden we had this scheduled, and even before that when after a year they had gotten their conditional use permit and I was trying to refresh myself on the case. And keep learning more and more about this whole thing every day. There's transmission lines down there that I see on the map that belong to WAPA and Basin. Of course, there's a lot of transmission lines that are smaller lines that, when you look at the IEA map, they don't show an owner. But what I believe is this transmission line and substation, because the description sounds identical, was just something that this commission worked on a little over a decade ago. And in the reports from that, Basin was seeking approval for this transmission line and substation to take strain off the system. So if I'm right about that, that tells me that the line was built from Belfield down there and this substation to take strain off. So why would Basin would do that? And at the time, there were no wind farms down there yet. It would seem as though Basin did that to supply power down there from their plants. And so, for one thing, I have concerns about the grid as a whole. Since the time of this hearing, a lot has changed in what we have witnessed and new developments in grid operation at SPP. We've had to increase the reserve margins. Both SPP and MISO are talking frequently about doing things to try and maintain base load. I think an important part of our siting process when we talk about adverse impacts is this going to be competing with sales of North Dakota utility in kind of a tipped over, heavily subsidized market that just further cripples the very load that both of these RTOs are trying to sustain. Secondly, even though I believe they both went into MDU transmission substations, I'm also concerned about the Cedar Hills and Thunder Spirit wind farms. This whole thing with the electric grid on these border areas where companies like MDU and Basin Electric have facilities in each and they interact together, it's hard to follow just where that energy goes. And so during the times of almost every day when demand is very, very low, are we at a point where adding additional generation here in times when the LMPs get very low, is there a mixture between the two where this is going to offset the production of Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills? Because Cedar Hills is out of PTCs. Thunder Spirit will be out of PTCs long before this one will. And so they're not going to be able to compete in those areas of the market when prices get below zero. And the fact of the matter is, when they're losing sales, our customers that we're protecting are picking up the cost of that, because whether they sell power from those facilities or not, they are entitled to recovery of their costs and a rate of return. And so I really worry about what kind of adverse impact this could have on ratepayers, to the extent that this generation doesn't just follow even an RTO line. And I don't know, someone has to explain to me better how the RTOs are so separate that it doesn't play a part in it, but they're always buying and selling from each other. So that's a big concern of mine.
Does staff have an initial response on that?
Nothing, I guess, specific. Generally speaking, in that part of North Dakota, and honestly, the majority of North Dakota, the SPP and MISO systems are pretty well tied together. I'm not aware of anything that would prevent, the exchange of electrons between the two. There's really more so just kind of measuring devices that ensure it's metered properly.
I guess my bigger question is, how does this concern get vetted in the siting process? And who is the, what expert opinion or evidence do we use if we were to consider this as a concern? And I don't disagree that it could be an issue, but Randy adding it to the record, I don't think qualifies as the kind of expert opinion we typically base our decisions on.
The adverse impacts, section of the siting law is, I think, gives us a lot of latitude. And, you know, there's how we've done it in the past, and there's the realities that we're facing now. When we've looked at some of these in the past, this whole electric system wasn't facing the strains that it's been under for the last year and a half. A lot has changed here. And just because no one has come in and stated the obvious doesn't mean it's not a reality. And I don't think it means that it's not something that we need to consider when we all see the strains of competition and the fact that a good part of the time you have markets operating in negative numbers. Well, we know that our existing infrastructure that regulated utilities, the customers of regulated utilities are going to have to pay for if they, to the extent they don't sell energy and make their own way, they can't compete with that. And I don't know how we ignore it when it, unless someone can come in and explain that I'm wrong, that nope, this somehow goes directly over into MISO and the two don't mix and this will not generate anything that offsets Thunder Spirit. It seems obvious to me that it does, as well as Basin Electrics. Certainly when you add 200 megawatts on a windy night, it's going to be displacing something that's been going on down there. And these are assets. We're seeing more and more efforts by both RTOs to protect some of these baseload generators. That's in relation to basins. And then, as I've explained, the impact on MDU's customers, if their wind farms set idle, that is that much more that's just going to be in general recovery instead of through a sale.
Well, if we're, as we go through this siting process in this kind of new, with some of these new considerations, it potentially creates a very significant departure that the commission might be making from how we've made our decisions in the past. And the market and the realities of the grid might warrant that. I want to, though, before I'll sign on, to kind of a departure of how we're, the factors that we're considering. I want to have a very solid record of expert evidence. And so, like, to go down that path that you've just suggested, Randy, I would probably want to open up the case again and take testimony from MDU and Basin to see how does this, do you have concerns about how this impacts your facilities and the economics of them and the ratepayers? And then I'd need to know from our attorneys whether we have the latitude to deny one company's permit because of impacts to, you know, siting permit because of impacts to ratepayers on the other side. But we'd have to have evidence that those impacts are, you know, more than just something we can anticipate or imagine, but that they, you know, can show us that, there will be impacts. That's what I would, that's kind of along the lines of something I would need, because I'm not comfortable superseding the judgment of the grid operators in their evaluation of these interconnection agreements. Well, with my own.
Hey, the grid operators, they make their interconnection decision based on whether it is going to the extent it'll cause congestion, or the extent of physically hooking two things together. The impacts to ratepayers, the impacts to competitors, that is not part of the interconnection decision.
True. But we don't currently in this record have anything on impacts to ratepayers or generators.
No, we don't. And when if we were to open it up to get expert testimony, and you mentioned from companies like Basin Electric and MDU, I'm not so sure that at that point we don't need advocacy staff, because like at least in MDU's case, which is the one that's really most jurisdictional to us, other than our efforts to protect some baseload to keep things going at the times when the wind farms aren't doing well. But MDU's got theirs built and approved. They're going to get their recovery, whether they sell power from it or whether it's through the ratepayer. That's what I'm concerned about. So I don't know that they're going to be likely to raise any alarm bells, because they're getting theirs. And the ratepayers, to whatever extent those things don't pay for themselves, are going to be paying on it for a long time. I don't think either of those wind farms, and when I say either, Cedar Hills and the Thunder Spirits, they're not even halfway through their depreciation yet. And so the ratepayers are going to be paying for those a long time, and we keep adding competitors that make them non-profitable, or that lower the amount of revenue they produce. That is certainly an adverse impact on ratepayers.
Is there any case law out there now regarding this?
So, case law, I'm not sure of. 492209. Guides us in what factors to be considering in evaluating the applications and designation of sites, corridors, and routes. It states clearly that the commission shall be guided by, but is not limited to, the following considerations where applicable to aid the evaluation, designation of sites, corridors, and routes. The first one, I think, is very applicable to this case. Available research and investigations relating to the effects of the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facility on public health and welfare, natural resources, and the environment. I think there's a pretty strong correlation between public health and welfare and grid reliability, grid stability, as to, you have hospitals, you have people that, are susceptible to heat and cold, all these things. So I think the electrical grid, I think it's fairly easy to state that goes to public health and welfare. One of the other issues that, and I mean, again, this is not an exhaustive list, because it tells us that we're not limited to just these things. Problems raised by federal agencies, other state agencies, and local entities. Understand that no federal agencies have, raised in this case specifically grid. But if you go up to the top, available research and investigations, that might apply. I'd have to do some more thinking and research into whether there is existing case law or not. But, I think the factors that the commission can consider, there's a good list, and it's not limited to just that list. So how far open that goes, I guess, is something I can look into.
Brian, when you contemplate the commission sort of deviating in a way, because this is not something we've considered in the past, what sorts of procedures, steps, evidence do you think we need to do that?
Prior precedence is always important. It establishes a pattern. If you're going to break from a pattern or really deviate from previous decisions, there probably needs to be good and just cause for a deviation. You know, everything's evolving all the time. I mean, if we were going to always, if we were not going to change our ways, I think our decisions as of late would be, you know, very different from those made in the past on different things because things do change. But there's got to be a strong reasoning, I think, and if there's some sort of a nexus to tie into existing law or case law or something that that shows a deviation from prior precedents and decision making, it always helps our case. But you know, I think prior precedents is a strong consideration, but I don't think it's something that overrides a decision made for a good reason, and that we can show that there's a good reason for making it.
So in this case, if we're talking about the changes in the reliability concerns in the two RTOs that would be at play here that have happened since the hearing, none of that evidence is in this official record. It's in our minds, obviously, but it's not in the record. What would need to be done to have that in the record, and what would that be?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think we could reopen the record on this. I think that another hearing could be held to address some of these concerns. That's always the commission's prerogative. If you guys don't feel that you have enough information at this time to make a decision, I think we could look to see if it's that strong. Would we want to have another hearing to have the company address some of these? There have been changes to the layout of this. There has been changes to the footprint of this. You know, there are reasons I believe that we could reopen the record. How expansive we can get with that, I would have to probably do a little bit more thinking on that. But I don't think it would. I think if you guys decided you wanted to have another hearing and get more questions answered from the company, I don't think there's an issue with that.
Okay. Sherry, Randy, do you have thoughts on that?
Kind of a question to Brian. We haven't traditionally done it, but I believe when we have a hearing outside of like the company's witnesses and people, we can call witnesses too to get information, correct? And even subpoena people if we want, right?
Yes, I believe we can. Yeah.
Because in with North Dakota not having a, you know, an office of advocacy or something, like I say, usually these things come through rate cases and we appoint advocacy staff, and I know the companies want to serve people and serve them well, but to the extent that sometimes the customer's interests and the company's interests differ, thus we have advocacy staff that brings their own witnesses. And like I say, I'm not really sure on Basin, but certainly in the case of MDU, they're getting their recovery anyway. So I think if we're going to reopen it to explore this, in addition to just looking at what I think is pretty clear, then I think we need to probably call some witnesses to better explain how some of these interactions are likely to play out.
Another thought on that in that regard is the company might not be concerned about rate recovery, but we could certainly ask them to look at constraints and runtimes and model some of the impacts to their ratepayers. They would be able to, you know, do that, model the kind of revenue that they anticipate receiving from these generators based on, you know, what they're getting today and the addition of another wind farm in that area. So they should be able to model that type of an impact and provide it to us, even if it's not a concern for them because they've got their, you know, rate recovery. I tend to think the companies like to make as much money as they can, though. So even if their costs are covered, they don't really like making less money in the market.
Well, just for Julie, this is Victor. If you're kind of speaking to MDU, they don't really make any more or less money dependent on how their wind farms in that area would, how much output they would have. So any margins that they make off of Thunder Spirit and Cedar Hills would go back to ratepayers through the fuel and purchase power rider.
Right. So that, I mean, that's money that they're getting, though.
But, I mean, they receive it on a temporary basis until it's passed back through those riders. Or that rider, not riders.
Right. But they could calculate that.
Oh, yes.
They could model it.
I would agree. I think they would have that ability to model that impact. And as I was kind of thinking about that, I was looking through the section of law that Brian just referenced, 492209. Item G in that section, the direct and indirect economic impacts of the proposed facility. I think that, you know, if you wanted to do a review along those lines, I think that would fit pretty nicely into there without even having to consider the, but we're not limited to these things. I think that thing is what we're thinking about here.
That's a great one. I think, too, just to the point of them making less or more money, I tend to disagree with you, Victor, that MDU would be ambivalent because they do care about what their rates are and their customers making, you know, more money being returned to their customers impacts the overall rate that their customers are paying, and I do think they care about that.
Sure.
Since you can't see him, he's making faces at
you. Let's take that under consideration and think about what we might need to do, and then we can work with staff on next steps in that regard.
Quick question before we move on too far from this. They don't have an interconnection yet?
Correct.
I was told that they do. I don't know. Maybe they have a conditional interconnection.
Okay. Right? Have we move forward on other projects that didn't have interconnections? Have we delayed projects until they've got interconnections in the past?
In the past, I don't believe we've delayed or denied anything without having an interconnection.
Okay. It's just something that popped into my head, and I thought we had on one, but I'm probably thinking of something else. So,
I'd like to revise my last thought on next steps on this regard. Could staff get together and think about this and maybe make some recommendations of a few different paths forward and things to consider and how we would address this concern in this case.
I guess real quick on that, a little bit maybe ahead of the letters that we received and whatnot. We did receive a letter this morning from the Soil Conservation District that has asked us to open up the record. They apparently have concerns with environmental impacts, so I don't know if that pushes us further or in one direction or the other, but I just wanted to make that aware to you, Julie. I don't know if you knew that came in yet.
Sure. And that kind of leads to the next piece, too. So, but the next question, but on the issue of grid impacts impacts to ratepayers Victor, Brian, Adam, can you guys get together and recommend some options for path forwards?
Sure. Yep.
Okay, perfect. Okay, then the last bucket. Well, there's two other buckets.
Can I interrupt you there? Because it's going to impact future wind farms too. You know, it's very likely we'll see similar scenarios laying out where, you know, existing wind farms, some of them potentially owned by North Dakota regulated utilities, could get displaced by something new going in with new subsidies. I think we might be to a point where part of our process in this, we may need to get some kind of a neutral consultant or someone with electrical engineering expertise as well as expertise in the utility markets that can really explain how these things are going to interact when they're in different RTOs but sharing some of the same lines and what is going to displace what. And, you know, MDU's revenues and stuff are certainly an important part of it, but I think we may be to a point where we need some kind of outside expertise, too.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes to a point of modeling, you know, what kind of impact this wind farm or any other would have on the other generators, you know, we don't even have the tools. I mean, the much less the know-how to run those models. So we would need to consider, an outside expert potentially. You know, even when I think about having MDU model something like that, they could model their own system, even though, you know, to a certain degree, this is outside of their system, but it interplays with their system. So we'd have to determine if they can, if they would be able to make such a model that would be accurate.
Okay, so you guys can consider that as well in your as you evaluate paths forward, and then maybe like if you can talk about that, maybe having some suggestions to us, is 2 weeks a reasonable time period to kind of consider various options and provide some thoughts back to us?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, I have a hard stop at 10:30, but there is a few other issues that are at play here. One, the big one being the game and fish and some of the environmental impacts that were included in the hearing and addressed and still pending, I think. And then the whole public input issues. But in terms of the game and fish requests, I'd asked Adam to reach out to the company and see where the company is on addressing the four things outlined at the end of their July 22nd, 2021 letter. I mean, I know that the company filed a letter after that and objected to some of them, but I just wanted clarity on like a yes or no, we want to do this, we don't want to do this, here's why we aren't going to do this, on those four issues. Or four recommendations from Game and Fish. And Adam, what did you hear back from the company on that?
Well, I didn't hear yes or no answers. But I can run you through what I did hear. So the first issue that North Dakota Game and Fish had is that they want two turbines located outside what are called priority conservation areas for the greater sage grouse. So APEX.
So their first recommendation was all proposed turbines be removed from the greater sage-grouse PCA and at least 4 miles from known sage-grouse lecks.
Right. So
you're saying that means moving two turbines.
Well, I'm going to break that down into two pieces here. So I'll break that down into first. Let me first address the two turbines that are located outside the priority conservation areas. APEX counters that there's something called the North Dakota Greater Sage-Grouse Conservation Plan. And they claim that they have reviewed that plan, and that plan defines a PCA as areas with high nesting potential. So that means less proportion of agriculture and higher proportion of grass cover and sagebrush, and low oil and gas well density, defined as less than 1.5 wells per square mile. And they go on and talk about how this is agriculture land, and I forget how far out they go, but there's something like, I don't know how many, you know, well heads and, you know, that are close by, but it's literally littered with a bunch of oil wells. So then what APEX is claiming is that because of that, those two turbines are actually not located in a PCA.
Isn't there known lecks that they're trying to get them away from?
There are known lecks from the Greater Sage Grouse lecks within 4 miles. So that's a second piece of that they wanted. They want five turbines to be placed at least 4 miles from known Greater Sage Grouse lecks. And the APEX counters that those five turbines are located on previously disturbed land, which is ag land, of course, with high oil and well density. And
well, I understand that, and that's, you know, but they're missing the point. There's lecks there. Mm-hmm. So regardless of, you know, whether they're citing them in the previously disturbed areas or how much other development is, there are lecks there that Game and Fish thinks need to be protected. And so their recommendation is to move those turbines. If there was no lecks there, then I would say that they had more of an argument for that, not for ignoring that recommendation, but there are lecks there. So protect the lecks, I guess, is my
right. And I forget where the nearest lek is.
If you look at Exhibit 30, it shows it.
Are you talking about this one?
This one? Okay, that's the lek, yeah.
So, I don't know if, I think this is that a mile? Because I recall the nearest lek was like 0.8 miles from the nearest.
0.8, I thought.
Is it, yeah, that's my recollection as well.
So,
and there was a pretty healthy discussion. I did ask some questions related to this during the hearing on why, with all their alternate turbine spots, they couldn't just move these and avoid the issue altogether. And we never really did get they were just, I think the answer that was provided is that they were priority turbines in higher wind areas than the planned reserved ones, so they were going to keep them.
Yeah. Okay.
Then the only other...
I disagree with that, just from my standpoint. I'm inclined to have them move those turbines and go with their alternates per Game and Fish advice, but... Okay, Adam, go ahead. Sorry. Okay.
Are you good with that one, Commissioner?
With number one?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so for number two, North Dakota Game and Fish requested voluntary offsets to recreate grasslands on broken land. In other words, something like a cropland, rather than preserve existing grasslands.
Mm-hmm.
And Apex has agreed to voluntarily, or whatever, acquire unbroken native grasslands to meet that request.
So they aren't recreating grasslands. They're just preserving existing grasslands.
Correct.
That's how it's different from what Game and Fish is recommending.
Yep. So in other words, yeah, exactly.
And did they say that to you again, Adam, or is that just what they've previously stated?
They've previously stated that, and they stated it again.
Okay. All right. I didn't hear you share.
What I'm asking is, those are notes he's reading from when he talked to the company.
It's a mixture of what was said in the hearing as well as kind of what I heard from the company.
Okay.
Because most of what they told me is already in the record. I would say maybe probably all of it.
So clarification, nothing has changed from the record to follow
right,
up
correct.
Based on your...
Yep, right. Yeah,
inquiries.
So I kind of reconciled the two. So I made sure they were the same.
And so, refresh me, is that a point of differentiation? That is Game and Fish saying there needs to be some mitigation? And Apex is saying, yeah, our mitigation is... we're going to make sure something else doesn't get damaged. And yeah. Game and Fish saying that's not mitigation, that's just making sure that it doesn't get any worse. Is it?
Yes.
And so that they're at odds on this, right?
Correct.
In your discussions with them, are they aware of the legislation in 2019 with the mitigation fund through the FELIRC, whatever that stands for, that Ag Commissioner Goring chairs?
I didn't mention that, and I'm not sure whether they're aware of that or not. What is it, by the way, in case they're listening?
Well, generally it was a fund that committee, which is made up of, you know, includes one of us, includes Game and Fish Department, a lot of ag groups, that they would then do some kind of mitigation program. And so whatever the agreed upon amount, and we've never gotten into what that's supposed to be, would go to that, and then that group would do something constructive with it, supposedly. I don't know that anyone's ever, well, no, I don't. I know that no one has ever used it, and I don't understand, no one has said why. They continue to go off in their own direction. And then what happened in Foxtail, they went off in their own direction, and then a lot of people didn't like what they did to mitigate the damages. And then they blamed us for that choice. And I don't want that to happen again.
The good points, Randy. I guess we can see how this one evolves in the coming weeks as we continue to pursue this this project and review it and consider it, because maybe the parties will continue working together and coming to a resolution. On number three, in the absence of 2-year pre-construction sharp-tailed grouse surveys, all turbines should be sited off unbroken grasslands, so on disturbed land, to avoid disturbing any leks which may be present. What's the status of that one, Adam? Have they agreed to that?
So let me give you the answer to this one. So Apex did conduct surveys, or Apex, what North Dakota Game and Fish requested is for Apex to go out and survey the entire project area. However, they only surveyed the known LEC locations, which are largely the locations of the LECs that the North Dakota Game and Fish Department identified. So that's point of contention number one. So what they did instead is that they surveyed these known LEC locations and an adjacent one-mile buffer over two breeding seasons in the years 2018 and 2019. And there are four turbines located on unbroken grasslands. And Apex claims through their surveys, I've just described that there are known or historical LEC locations at or near those locations.
So basically, they just have looked at what Game and Fish already knows is there and said, we aren't locating any turbines in those spots.
Correct.
And Game and Fish, their concern in this, if I understand it correctly, is that their records are not like the conclusory record of all LECs. This wildlife goes out and they create new LECs at times. And so they might not know where all of them are. And since this is an area where the state's best habitat for these species are, they're hoping that there might actually be more LECs than what they know about and don't want in this specific area where we've got a concentration of this population that's shrinking. They don't want to exacerbate that, so keep them off of the unbroken grasslands.
Right.
So there's a difference in that one, too.
What's the reluctance to do the complete survey?
What's the what?
The reluctance to survey the whole land. Because they're only surveying certain sections, correct? Certain areas. And Game and Fish asked them to survey the whole.
Right. Let me read up on this, because this might address it here. So if you give me a moment to read here.
I guess while Adam's reading that, it's a slight shift of gears, but I do have a kind of an animal-related issue to this, is too. They did apply for an eagle take permit on this. I did ask some questions at the hearing. I asked for the estimated number of eagles that they estimate that they are going to be incidentally killed. Because the count numbers were so high on this is what brought my attention to it for golden eagles. My understanding is the way it works is they apply, U.S. Fish and Wildlife does some sort of modeling to determine what that number would be. So I'd be interested in hopefully getting some follow-up on that from the company as well. It is a pretty prime golden eagle nesting area. Counts are way higher than any other projects that I've seen since I've been here. So I'd like some follow-up on what that eagle take permit number is going to be.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, I think that's very important on that permit and what it all means.
Yeah.
Numbers.
Maybe they're not going forward with that permit anymore. But if they are, I think that number would be something that the commission should have prior to making a decision, possibly.
Okay.
Do you need a little more time, or did you find what you're?
Yeah. No, I found what I'm looking for.
Okay.
So Apex did provide in the record the meeting minutes, essentially a summary of their discussion with the North Dakota Game and Fish. So what they're claiming is, I'll just read this to you here. In terms of the prairie grouse we're talking about, North Dakota Game and Fish Department indicated that they completed LEC surveys for greater sage grouse and sharp-tailed grouse in and around the project area and are monitoring translocated greater sage grouse in Bowman County. North Dakota Game and Fish Department offered to provide the most current historical and active LEC location data to inform facility siting. it was agreed that APEX should supplement the annual North Dakota Game and Fish Department LEC surveys by surveying known LECs, including historic LEC locations in or within 1 mile of the project area. So what they're claiming is that, in my conversation then with them, is that they already fulfilled the initial requirement that the Game and Fish Department had requested, and that the first time that they had heard from Game and Fish wanting them to survey the entire project area was when that last letter from Game and Fish Department was sent to our agency.
Okay.
So how do we resolve that?
Well, we end up weighing in. I mean, we seek advice from, we seek counsel and information from these agencies. We don't have to resolve it, every single thing we want. We can use it in our overall decision.
Okay.
You know, we have to decide how important of a request it is.
Okay.
And Julie, before we can sign off, I have another topic that I'd like about 2 minutes on.
Okay. Well, I think the Game and Fish stuff, since we're going to be moving on and doing some more work on this project, my thoughts are this on the Game and Fish stuff. I would urge the parties to try to come to resolution. So the company should try to work with Game and Fish and resolve these issues, those four specific issues, because, I mean, we will do our best to weigh what Game and Fish is asking and come to a balanced resolution ourselves. But in looking at the record, I feel there's way too much of a company saying, we said this, and Game and Fish is laying out its rationale for what it's asking. And, I mean, it's incumbent on the company to address the issues in a meaningful way to resolve them. And when they can't get them resolved, then we can, you know, understand what they're saying and try to you know, determine best who to give our weight to. But I don't feel like the company has finished its collaboration with Game and Fish on this project.
And it, you know, I think compared to most of the projects we've approved, this has a higher percentage of their total turbine count of alternates available to them. And even the response at the hearing, based on my notes and recollection of it, was kind of a shrug of the shoulders. And, well, you know, we like the project even better if we can get these sites. But they've never really presented a real strong case that the whole thing unravels or that it's really a huge loss to them if they don't do these that are close to the LEC. It just kind of has so far seemed to me like it's, well, you know, we'd prefer to use them.
And I guess I'm going to really agree with Commissioner Fedorchak when the response was the first they heard of it, of a complete land survey, is when they got the letter. Well, that's not an adequate response to me as far as a rationale. Are you going to do the complete land survey or not? Why or why not? I mean, if not, why? Just say, well, the first I've heard of it was when they got the letter is not acceptable is a response.
I'm guessing some of it is that they requested a 2-year survey and now they've put it off this long and not put off construction.
Well, yeah.
So. Could have done it earlier.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
And I've got one other. We didn't discuss North Dakota Game and Fish Department's fourth request. So the North Dakota Game and Fish wanted APEX to acknowledge that plots agreements cannot be altered with landowner and department approval. So APEX,
yeah.
Yep. So in other words, I think what this
one... And did they acknowledge that?
No, they didn't. They claim that this is private land.
Oh, well, they need to work with Game and Fish on those contracts because those are actual agreements. And I think they need to put more time in with Game and Fish to understand how the PLOTS program works. And so, again, they need to continue working through their issues with Game and Fish and hopefully come to resolution with them on it. Okay, Randy, you had another issue.
Yes.
You wanted a couple minutes on.
In past wind farm cases, I have objected to sometimes big areas of their footprint where there's no roads, no turbines, they're just including them in the footprint. I have no objection. They can give those landowners all the money they want. I don't care. But I have oftentimes objected to those areas being included in the footprint, and then we carve them out of the footprint. If you have a map handy of the turbine, I'm just going to point out four. There are more than this. But if you start up right east of Rame, these are in two different townships, but just on the east side of Rame, townships 24, 19, and 30, there's three sections of land. They're not full sections, but parts of three sections of land could be completely taken out, and I don't see the impact. Then if you go over to Marion Township, the same thing with Section 1. Go down to Adelaide Township. It's Sections 20 and 26. And then coming around to Nebo Township, there's like parts of six different sections that are in here that I really don't see infrastructure on. And, you know, we put these in the footprint. Now, even though they're not using them, now Apex has something to say about some other potential developer that would like to develop something in this area. And like I say, we've done this before, and we've had comment too about the vastness of this project compared to the number of turbines. There's just four examples. There's others, pieces in here that are substantial that could be carved out.
I'll say one thing I noticed, so in the upper section there next to Rame, so in section 30, it looks to me like they have a start of a access road in section 30 in the very southeast corner, not quite the southeast corner, but the southeast quarter section of 30. It may not be visible on all maps, but the map I happen to be looking at looks like it has both collector lines and road access roads.
Well, I'm just requesting staff to just look at the map and see these areas that it doesn't seem like, you know, parts, you know, if part of a section is in there and it's needed, well, you know, you could probably take that owner's parcel. But if in a section of land there's nothing, let's maybe inquire whether there is something or not. I don't like it being included in there just because they need to pay that landowner, because they can pay them without it being in the footprint. And so these were just some examples on a small map I was looking at.
Unless it's possible the easement language that would require the payment may have some provision for that, but it's not necessarily our concern.
To the extent we can confine this down, I think it would be good.
Okay. Well, we've had a good discussion. There's a lot of issues pending on this one. So, and then also there's the request from outside parties to open up the hearing. So, staff, I think if you can kind of reconvene after hearing session today and talk amongst yourselves about what you think might be some of the best steps forward, and we can hopefully discuss maybe not all the alternatives, but I would like to chat with you just myself next week about, you know, what's the process for opening up the hearing or getting additional evidence in another way, so we can keep this moving forward. I don't want to spend a month trying to figure out what we're going to do. I think we should try to make that decision fairly quickly. So with that, are there any other thoughts that Randy or Sherry or staff have on this case today?
I think mine are all checked off.
Mine have been addressed. Thank you.
Are we looking at another work session, I guess, is where my question is there going to be another work session, or are we going to try to wrap this up? And
well, no, we might be opening a hearing up, another hearing up. So that's what you guys have to talk.
Okay.
Come up with some options for how we proceed. We'll talk next week, and then we'll make a decision from there.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess just to add to that, when looking at this, there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, a lot of information to obtain, and if we're having trouble getting it, then I don't object to opening up a hearing. I mean, but it's got to be timely. I mean, we've got to do this, and the company has to put forward a good effort on getting some of this information to us, or clarifying, working with Game and Fish.
Okay. With that, I think that we've exhausted our time and appreciate everybody's engagement. Thank you, Adam, for all your hard work on this. We will have some ideas if this in the future about options, and we might need a work session to discuss those options. But let's come up with a plan first, and we can get together.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.